guys, and welcome to Prose Before Hoes,
the podcast where we talk about what we're thinking, drinking, and reading.
Well, I suppose we should probably start by introducing ourselves, don't you think, Elle?
Yep, this isn't going to be cringy at all.
I'll go first, just to set the bar real low and embarrassing. I'm Camilla, I work in publishing at Ebury, which is part of Penguin Random House, and I'm an assistant editor there. I managed to read an impressive amount for someone who literally doesn't stop talking. I'll read anything, really, non-fiction and fiction, but I probably lean towards literary memoirs and literary fiction. I have approximately 400 hobbies, but if I'm not reading, then I'm probably drawing. I just bought a bike, so who knows? Maybe I'll become a 45-year-old man having a midlife crisis by the next episode. Stay tuned. Elle and I met in a seminar at university during our first year. And I think that's how all great romances start. You know, and I've been following you around since, haven't I?
We both did philosophy. Well, I did English and philosophy.
Overachiever.
But we met in an English seminar and bonded over a mutual love of Jeanette Winterson.
We did do that, didn't we? Do you wanna talk a little bit about your lovely self, Elle?
My favourite topic. Hi everyone, I'm Elle. I work in communications and events at a university in London, and much like Camilla, I like a bit of everything to read, but tend to gravitate towards fiction that is a lot about interpersonal relationships and dynamics and what is and isn't said, but then also really like reading essays and anything pertaining to the human condition. So that's me, folks.
Okay, well, why don't we start with what we're drinking this week? Elle, what are you drinking this week?
In a controversial move, this girl is drinking cider. And I realise you don't know who I am, so you didn't get that joke that was really funny, right, Camilla?
The intellectual hook behind that joke is that Elle primarily drinks cider.
Or just any apple-based product. I'm your girl.
The fizzing of the bubbles on your cider would have been great ASMR. That would have been...
ASMR freaks me out.
It's not a sex thing, guys. It's not a sex thing. I am trying to limit my alcohol intake, so I've decided to go with a single tequila shot, and I will be drinking Sierra Silver Tequila. Okay, so I'm going to do a tequila shot now, which is, you make it sound like I'm not being really cool, but that's a cool thing to do, right? A tequila shot? It's a Monday when we're recording this. Woo! Ooh. Which is, it's surprising I'm not drinking bourbon right now because I'm a sick lad who drinks whiskey. But today it's tequila, and I'm just trying to put this on at this stage. And we only have coarse sea salt in the house. So please spare a thought.
We could have put it in the pestle and mortar.
And in case you were wondering if we're middle class. Alright, it's happening. I'm picking, Jesus, this salt is, I don't think we need more than 3 grains of that, because that is, that's chonky. Okay. Right. What order is it again? It's salt tequila.
Tequila, oh, lime.
Okay. 3.
If
2.
She projectile vomits, how funny will that be? Anyway. No, actually, I'll have to clean it up.
That will be bad ASMR.
She is struggling, but she's on the home straight now. She is sucking that lime.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. That's definitely tequila.
Oh, that is a thing that happened.
All right, well, now I definitely feel ready to record a podcast. Woo! Okay, so we're going to start off, we're going to talk a little bit about some stuff that we've been enjoying this week, like whether that's pop culture, current affairs. I'm pretty sure Ella's going to talk about our houseplants, which is...
Oh, I might. I haven't decided. Well, there's just so much lovely stuff in the world to be thankful for.
Yeah, at the moment, the world is definitely going through a real sweet spot of lovely stuff. I've been teasing Elle, saying that I've been listening to a new podcast, not ours, obviously, but that I wouldn't tell her what the podcast was, because we live together and I talk a lot, so I basically tell Elle every thought that comes into my head constantly, so it's been really hard for me to keep this a secret. But yeah, so I've been watching a podcast, that's not what you do to podcasts.
That is so impressive.
I know. I've been listening to a podcast called Dead Eyes. And the premise of this podcast is Connor Ratliff, a kind of minor Hollywood actor, got fired from Tom Hanks directed and Tom Hanks starred in a TV show, a miniseries about 20 years ago in the early 2000s called Band of Brothers. Connor Ratliff auditioned for a very small part of Detective Zelinsky and he got hired. And then he got a call from his agent saying that you've got to come re-audition. Tom Hanks thinks you have dead eyes. And essentially, Connor got fired from the production by Tom Hanks after auditioning with him for having dead eyes. And what this podcast, the entire premise of this podcast is Connor is trying to figure out why. So he interviews just a whole load of people. And actually, it starts off the premise. I was attracted to the premise because I thought this is like a murder mystery that just doesn't matter. And I really like that. And I feel like I really need that kind of mundanity in my life right now. Like, I don't really want to listen to how like 14 people died and they had to find a mass murderer. What I want to listen to is one man with a grudge against Tom Hanks for an event that happened 20 years ago. And like, it's amazing because he draws all these amazing connections between all these stars. And he was in a play with Jon Hamm in high school. So he gets Jon Hamm on the podcast. And he was like, what is Jon Hamm doing here? And I haven't finished listening to it yet. But obviously the hope is that he gets Tom Hanks on the podcast to ask Tom Hanks, why did you fire me?
To be fair, that actually has piqued my interest.
It turns into a really interesting discussion about kind of failure and holding grudges as regards to your career and how do you come back from something like that. And he actually talks a lot about feelings of rejection. And, you know, as somebody who has participated in the theatre, I find it very interesting. That's a joke because I was literally in one Edinburgh Fringe show like 4 years ago and I just won't shut up about it. And yeah, I've really been enjoying it. I would really recommend it. It's not the sort of thing that I would think I'd normally go for, but you know, it feels sort of like how to fail, but with one really begrudged minor actor in Hollywood. And but yeah, that's something I've really been enjoying this week, and I would definitely recommend it if you'd like a little bit of escapism and if you want to feel like your grudges are justified, because this man has been holding one for 20 years.
Have you seen a photo of this man? Does he have dead eyes?
Do you know what? It's not, I have actually looked up a picture of him and it's not apparent in his headshots, but I feel like he's probably worked on it.
I mean,
one would hope that he would take Tom Hanks's slightly insulting and ultimately not that useful note.
This just falls into, and I'm gonna make myself very unpopular now, so I'm probably gonna regret saying this, but I don't think Tom Hanks is as nice as everybody thinks he is. But I'm very suspicious of this, like, Mr. Nice Guy thing that he's got going on, and everyone seems to be, like, falling for it, hook, line, and sinker.
I mean, it's interesting that you say that, and I actually knew you'd bring that up as soon as I mentioned this. But they get on a lot of people around Hollywood. They get casting directors, they get normal directors. For some reason, a guy who directed two of the Star Wars movies is on there. At no point is it particularly clear why, but he's there. I think he has a vague connection to Tom Hanks. And they all say that he's just a really nice guy.
I know, and everyone says that, but I don't know.
They say that he's not always on, so sometimes he's just a normal nice guy and he's not, you know, Tom Hanks nice.
But maybe I'd like normal Tom Hanks. Maybe I just don't like Hanks show.
Maybe we need to start a podcast to get you to meet Tom Hanks, and then you can say whether or not you like him.
Yeah, maybe. I'm sure we'd get on really well. Maybe he wouldn't like me, you know? C'est la vie. What have I been enjoying? As Camilla said, we have lots of plants, because what else do you do when you move into a flat and then you can't leave it? So we've just filled it with other living things. And people say they don't talk back, but I disagree.
I'm hearing voices, guys.
I'm hearing voices. Camilla has a lovely plant that she has called Vlad. I'm not going to say anything. That's what it's called. It's very nice. She also has another one that she's called Peggy, who is super cute. And it's actually, I can see now, looking a lot healthier than she was a few days ago.
Yeah, a few of Peggy's leaves were looking pretty angry, so I put them in the sun. She seems a bit happier now. Also, I have rapidly gone from being somebody who has no houseplants, no interest in having houseplants, to somebody who will take their houseplants into the shower with them so they get the right level of humidity. Because, you know, it's just not the same as spraying their leaves. They really need that genuine humidity, and I'm just here being a good plant mum.
Meanwhile, and I don't want to sound smug, because I swear if it then dies after this, that will be karma. They're not all named. I have one little plant that doesn't have a name that was a housewarming gift. She is thriving.
She is so low-key. You know when men are like, I just want a woman that's like low maintenance? They are talking about that plant. I don't think I've ever seen either of us water that plant.
No, she just does so well. Then I bought another one again. We're not even millennials either. We're like the next one after
we're just
millennials.
Sad.
Yeah, that is true. But we're like Gen.
Yeah, I don't like that though, because that makes me feel like I should be on TikTok. Whenever Gen comes in front of
me. No, I think we're like the mid one though. I think there's another one off. I don't know.
Are we Gen X? Or is that before?
Anyway, basically, my plants are doing really, really well. And I ordered one from this company called The Stem. And then they gave me a free one, which looks like a little alien. And then my dad got me a tomato plant. So basically, I've got a lot of foliage to talk to.
We got a lot of plants going on. So, speaking of plants, I am loving the high pollen count right now. Because all my exes have really bad hay fever. So it's just nice to walk through the park hay fever free and just know that they're suffering.
Camilla's a really nice person.
I'm not bitter. Just tired. That should be my slogan. I'm not bitter, I'm just tired. No, best of luck to my exes. Stock up on the purities.
My sister sent me a song, which is our primary way of communicating with each other, which she introduced as, I have listened to this 30 times on repeat and I'm not about to stop now. And I was like, okay, how good is this going to be? And then guess what? I listened to it 40 times because I'm her big sister and I have to do better than her. And it is Baby Pink and Blue by Josie Mann. And just, you're welcome, you know? You'll listen to it first time and you'll be like, yeah.
What's the vibe? What sort of music is it?
But it's poppy and upbeat, but it's not pop.
I know what you mean.
It's
like Taylor Swift.
Definitely not like Taylor Swift.
Like Muse.
No.
Elvis.
No. Like, you know what? Just listen to it. That's what I'm gonna say. It's like upbeat, slightly alternative, a little bit jingly jangly, but it's just got a really good beat and you can listen to it on repeat and you just don't get bored of it, so.
Something else I've been enjoying is Kat Cohen on Instagram is like my new favourite thing. She's a comedian who won the Best Newcomer at the Edinburgh Fringe Awards a few years ago. She's based in New York and her Instagram page is basically just like a beacon of self-confidence and positivity. And I think she's got a book coming out next year with an American publisher. I'll be interested to see which UK publisher snaps that up. Unfortunately, it doesn't really fall in my remit of publishing, so I cannot, and that breaks my heart. She also writes these great poems, and I've made Elle listen to me do like a dramatic reading of
the sassy lady.
I'm gonna read one of her poems because I think they kind of surpass description. Really, they're just brilliant. Okay. So this is one of Kat Cohen's poems. It's called Poem I Wrote After I Made You Tell Me I Was Sexy 4 Times Today. I'm finding quarantine to be an amazing time to revert to the basest, most vile version of myself I've worked years to outgrow. I'm reading a book about the guy who discovered the color mauve and Googling vintage wallpaper. Don't tell me what day it is. I've never been patient. I don't know how to let something go. People love encouraging self-care until it's inconvenient for them. Everyone on Twitter is upset and that's the point. One time I had a trainer who was like, instead of having 4 drinks in one night, you should have 4 drinks in 1 week. And I was like, yeah, that's definitely an amazing idea. Boys love getting haircuts. Boys love analogies. Boys love arguing and calling it philosophy. This guy who wronged me just liked my comment on our mutual friend's Instagram. I'm almost 30. They're just so good. I just really enjoy them. I feel like she, like, there's the definition of capturing a mood. That's a mood, is what I'd call that. And I think we really would be remiss if we didn't mention Paul Mescal's thighs. Everybody is obsessed with Connell's chain.
See, everyone's talking about his chain and his thighs, but I care about his jacket. That jacket.
I thought you were going to say you care about his personality there, but I'm glad that we're all on the same page where we only care about his clothing and slightly inappropriate body
He's
parts.
He's just clearly a sound guy, but like if we're going on aesthetics, that jacket with the Krabbies, was it ginger beer? I don't know. And then the G&T cans, it's just...
It was the pink G&T cans. Like, it's just... I know that we're not really talking about it anymore, but, like, Big Dick Energy. I know that moment has passed and it's kind of gone out of the public lexicon, but that was Big Dick Energy.
Somebody...
Him in tiny little shorts, like a 80s windbreaker and little pink gin and tonic cans. I was like, that's a mood. Again, it's a mood. Him and Kat Cohen should talk. I think they'd get on.
That would actually be entertaining.
That would be really
interesting. I think she would, like, devour him, though.
I think she would ruin
but
him.
But then I think that is unfair on him, because he's got, like, a sort of... he's got, like, a understated, sort of commanding kind of nature. So maybe he'd hold his own. I don't know.
We have faith in you, Paul. If you ever meet Kat Cohen, don't be afraid of women just because they're loud.
Now for judging a book by its cover.
So in this segment, we're gonna talk about a book one of us hasn't read, which I know sounds slightly contradictory to the entire point of this podcast, but I promise we will be talking about things we have read afterwards. In this section, one of us will have read a book, the other person won't have. The person who hasn't read the book has to guess the plot of the book on its cover alone. This week, we're going to be discussing Irish author Neisha Dolan's fiery debut, Exciting Times. The cover, if you haven't seen it, give it a quick Google. It's essentially red and orange with some toothbrushes in a little toothbrush holder and then a toothbrush on.
Facing towards, the two toothbrushes in the cup are facing towards each other and the one not in the cup is almost like it's looking at them.
Yeah.
I think that's important.
So I've read the book and I'm going to talk a little bit about whether or not I enjoyed it and what I enjoyed about it after Elle has tried to guess what the book is about purely from the cover. Take it away, Elle.
Setting wise, because of the colour scheme, I'm thinking, see, I'm a bit conflicted here. I'm thinking there is definitely a sense of warmth. I think it's summer. It could be a hot country, but I don't think it is. I think it's, but maybe I've just been influenced by the Irish name, but I'm thinking it's more close to home. I don't think we're going to far-flung places, but I could be wrong.
Okay, so you think it's set in and around the UK?
I think there is a warm climate involved. I don't know if there's just a great summer in the UK slash Ireland, or if we're going on holiday. Maybe we go on holiday in the plot. But there's an element of sun. I can't wait to be so wrong about this. I'm also thinking there's a dynamic of a friendship between two girls. I mean, not necessarily, but between two girls, maybe. Mm. A genuine but quite intense friendship in the way that female friendships can be.
Like you and me in week two of self-isolation when we had coronavirus.
I'm not sure anything can match that energy.
Yeah, that was synergy, is what that was.
But yeah, I think we've got a strong, close-knit friendship. And then I think we have the dynamic of a certain strong intimacy, there we go, being usurped in some way by maybe someone else moving in. I think these people live together, hence the toothbrushes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because toothbrushes are like always a motif of like intimacy and like being comfortable in a space, I feel.
You say that and I think it's interesting because there are really two types of people and it's people that will share toothbrushes and people that will not share toothbrushes.
True, true. But I also mean that when you leave your toothbrush somewhere or if you put your toothbrush in the pot. We don't have a pot. I always think this. We need a pot.
I have a pot.
Yeah, for yours. I just think people that live together should share a toothbrush pot.
Okay, well, we can look into it. I mean,
I just sound really needy now. But yeah, so I think there's friends, and I think they live together. I think they have a really strong friendship. And then I think that intimacy and friendship is in jeopardy because one of them starts a new relationship, and that partner maybe moves into the flat. And there's that difficulty between, like, the balance of maintaining friendships and not getting completely absorbed in another person. That kind of vibe.
So that's the plot. That's the plot, the kind of premise that you're working off of.
Yes. And then I wondered if the title, Exciting Times, was not a dig. I think it could work on two levels. When people move in with their partners and things, there's a general rhetoric of, oh, this is such an exciting time. But also, exciting times is also being single and hanging out with your friends and running around.
Yeah.
So I feel like there could be something playing on that, maybe. But also just ideas of transition and change. So I don't really know a plot per se, other than what I've kind of said, but the vibe being that and sort of tumultuous relationships and how they can change and power dynamics.
Okay, so anyone who has read the book will probably be quite surprised because you've definitely come close. I think you'd really enjoy it too, Al, because you love Sally Rooney. I can be a little reticent to compare authors in that way because Sally and Neisha are such talented writers in their own ways and in their own right individually. But I do think there's a similarity in tone that definitely resonates in both of their work. Hilary Mantel says on the cover that it's a droll, shrewd and unafraid debut. And I think that sums it up really nicely. I don't want to give too much away for anybody who hasn't read it and is kind of here for a bit of a review more than anything. But essentially, Ava leaves Ireland and moves to Hong Kong to teach rich kids English. She's convinced everybody hated her back home and she falls in with the wealthy and older Julian. She then meets a young professional called Edith and exciting times ensue, as they say. I really love this book and the stark contrast between the two relationships that run through it, two romantic relationships, and the way that gender and money and even age, I think, play into the power dynamics in our romantic relationships. Nolan really balances discussions of class and sexuality and the way that we interpret language incredibly elegantly. I also really like the way that the plot is almost monotonous. It forces you to really live inside Ava's mind. There isn't any huge bang, and I know that you enjoy these kind of plots as well, Al. It's in the first person and it's amazing the way that she so perfectly mimics our own thought patterns and the strange ways that our thoughts kind of diverge off sometimes. It also really wonderfully captures the way that we navigate interpreting other people's language and how that can mirror our own view of ourselves and how we can mirror that onto other people's language when that isn't necessarily true or maybe even fair. I'm not sure throughout the book that the way that Ava kind of interprets what other people are saying to her is a really a reflection of what they're saying as much as a reflection of how she sees herself. For me, it was an incredibly interesting look into the way that our views of ourselves can impact language and that words are very much open to interpretation. They don't exist in a vacuum. In the same way that you can see with Ava that she has this lens that she views relationships through, I'm not sure it matches up with reality. But then when it comes to one-on-one relationships with other people, how far is our perception from reality? Surely how someone's words make us feel is an important part of the relationship. It was also nice to read a book where I was like, yeah, that mimics my own thought patterns sometimes, and sometimes my brain does that. It's relatable, and there are no like huge Shakespearean tragedies, no plot bangs, no big events.
I enjoy reading things when nothing happens, therefore everything happens. Books like that, which aren't focused on sort of plot pivots and the kind of undulations of that sort of can shine a big light on sort of interpersonal relationships and things like that.
Yeah, I feel like when you've got books where the plot is this huge dramatic sequence of events, you rarely get the time to go through personal relationships with a fine tooth comb.
Yeah, or a toothbrush.
So yeah, what else have you been reading recently and enjoying, Elle?
Well, I've been inhaling books because there isn't anything else to do, really, is there? One that I read and have wanted to read for ages is Circe by Madeline Miller. I am a sucker for ancient Greek sort of like myths and that whole vibe. I liked the way it took a sort of fantastical plot. So I'm not going to give anything away, but essentially we have a goddess who isn't your typical kind of goddess. She ends up on an island, which she makes her own, and then she encounters different people, so mortals, who are either shipwrecked or just arrive on the island, and other gods and titans. But then it's very grounded and measured in how it approaches it. So whilst you're dealing with gods and goddesses and magic and all that kind of stuff, it doesn't feel silly at any point. And I think probably a good reflection of ancient Greek myths and legends, because whilst they're very exciting and they've got a lot going on, there's always a sort of thread of some quite like key and grounding concepts, even if they are a bit 2D at some point. So like honour and all that jazz. It's definitely an empowering read. There's definitely strong sort of feminist ideals weaved through it. But again, you don't feel like you're being told how to sort of ingest the text, if you know what I mean.
I mean, I read Circe as well 9 months ago. And I really enjoyed it too. And I think she's sort of outcast, isn't she?
Mm.
And she rewrites the narrative around her being outcast from kind of god society.
Quite a constant tension between her happiness and acceptance that she is not like the others whilst also being one of them.
Yeah.
It's something that sort of ebbs and flows.
I think we can just both really recommend Circe, can't we?
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's more the sort of book that you probably would have been attracted to anyway. It's certainly not, like, Greek mythology is not something that I'm particularly familiar with, but I really, really enjoyed Circe, and I think I was saying this earlier to Elle, Madeline Miller is like a gateway drug.
But that's why I think it's interesting, because it was something that I was already interested in,
yeah,
and I still enjoyed.
With ancient Greece and the way that we kind of center narratives throughout history, they're so often centered on men. And one thing that Circe does is it puts this outcast female at the center of the story. And it's something, again, we both really enjoyed The Silence of the Girls by Pat Barker. And it's a similar thing where it just takes a story that history has kind of ignored and shines a light on it. And I think, yeah, if you enjoy Circe or if you enjoyed Silence of the Girls, like either or, they're both really brilliant books. And I can definitely recommend Madeline Miller's other book, The Silence of the Girls.
Song for Achilles.
And I'm having a meltdown. Song of Achilles. James going crazy here. Yeah, and I actually, like I said, a gateway drug. I went from reading Circe to Song of Achilles to Silence of the Girls. And then I actually picked up this very short book, part of the Canongate retelling of myths and kind of classic stories by Jeanette Winterson called Wait. And it's a retelling of the story of Atlas, who is condemned to shoulder the world by the gods that he defied. It's a really, really interesting book. A refrain that kind of reoccurs throughout it is, I want to retell the story. I don't want the story that's been told around something to be the only way that it is seen, because it's not necessarily true. And a big aspect of the book is choice, and the way that things that can seem like they were destiny or fate are actually cumulative of our choices. And that when we really examine our choices, we find that there's movement in them. And Jeanette Winterson, like she does with a lot of her writing, brings it back to her own adoption and her kind of, she doesn't know who her parents were, she doesn't even know when her birthday is. And she talks about that towards the end, and there's a line that I really, really, really enjoyed, which I'll read. What is it that you contain? The dead. Time. Light patterns of millennia opening in your gut. Your first parent was a star. And I'm just a big fan of the kind of concept that we can be more than our past and we can be our own authors of our story. And again, that's something that I think Madeline Miller touches on in Circe. You haven't read Wait, have you?
No.
I think you'd really enjoy it.
But I love Winterson.
Oh my God. She's definitely my favourite author.
She's definitely... I don't really do favourites because I find it too difficult, but she's definitely up there. And actually, like, circling back...
circling back.
Something I found when reading Circe was that I felt an affinity to Circe, the lead, but there would be instances where her thought patterns or her take or her reaction to something or her feelings weren't necessarily intuitive to me.
Yeah.
Whilst I also sort of had this affinity, and I thought that was interesting because obviously it made you think differently about what was happening against a bedrock of a sort of understanding. And I also have that when I read Winterson. I feel like when anybody reads anything, whether you want to or not, you put yourself into the story.
Yeah.
In terms of, even if it's just your reaction, you're embedding it in your interpretation of the text. And I find with Winterson as well, that sort of level of get what she's on about, but then she can subvert and change things, is obviously why we read books and certainly what I look for when I'm reading something.
Yeah, and I think you can tell on a personal level that Jeanette Winterson, obviously all the authors in this mini-series done by Canongate, the authors were able to choose the stories that they focused on and retold. And I mean, she's just so astute because she's read this story about a guy who's shouldering the world, and what she's found in it is something to relate to. And I think often we can feel like we are stuck with our past on our shoulders, and that we're kind of weighed down by decisions we've made throughout our lives. You know, and obviously for a lot of us, it starts from birth. From Winterson, I think it probably feels to her like it started maybe when she realised that she didn't know the origin of her story. I like the idea that we can be our own authors.
That is interesting. I think that comes across from what you're saying about Wait, definitely as in Circe. Sometimes you can feel like you're just the lead character in your story, and sometimes not even that. That is an issue when you're the second character in your life. But I think the idea that you are the author of your own story can be difficult because, like you were saying, being born into a family dynamic or just whoever raises you, I think it can sometimes feel like they write the character and you live the character, and obviously it shapes and molds and develops. It can feel like your starting point was dictated by somebody else,
yeah,
and that is definitely present in Circe for sure.
So yeah, I think, I mean, rounding up some book recommendations from us. Exciting Times by Nolan. Just a really intelligent debut.
Looking forward to reading it.
Circe, The Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Silence of the Girls by Pat Barker.
Is a great book.
It's great.
I highly recommend that.
Really good. And Wait by Jeanette Winterson. I think that rounds up the books that we've sort of touched on. Well, now we're coming to our final segment. And it's just one thing that we've hated this week, because sometimes we have this chance to create our own space online. And you know what I want to do in it? I want to complain, Elle. I want to complain. Okay, so, I mean, I'll start. I'm hating men crawling into my lockdown DMs in all their various weird ways. I've had one guy that I went on, like...
Yours are not normal.
Mine are everyone's not normal.
Everyone's had exes, like, crawl out of the woodwork, but yours...
I can't figure out whether it's a compliment, whether I'm insulted. There was one guy who I went on literally like two dates with who tried to add me on House Party. And I just thought, where's the social decorum in that? That's nothing compared to earlier. It was last week, wasn't it? Last week when an ex messaged me and asked me if I could send him my best cover letter.
I kind of respect it. Hard to find a good one. And when you find that, you can't let that go. You've got to hold on to that. It's a love worth fighting for.
The cover letter.
Yeah,
by the way.
Definitely
not the other one. Sorry. I'm going to take it as a compliment. And you know what? It was a fabulous cover letter.
Got you a job, so.
Yeah, got me the job that I have now at Penguin, which is awesome. In our next podcast, or maybe the one after that, I know that I had a lot of questions on my Instagram about getting into publishing, and I'll be fielding some questions and talking a little bit about that. And yeah, so I'm not loving men sliding into my lockdown DMs, like, don't make me sad and then ask to copy my homework, is the vibe that I'm feeling for that whole cover letter fiasco.
T-shirts will be available soon.
What are you really hating this week, girl?
Something that has, like, I'm sure just niggled when it popped up in my life, but has become very prescient now, is the chaotic energy that people who don't cycle a lot, just hopping on a Boris bike with careless abandon and creating peril wherever they go in the park. And it's obviously been a massive influx of that recently. And don't get me wrong, I think it's really nice that people want to get active and try cycling and things. Battersea Park has become like a M25 route. It's just stressful. And I don't think with other things, it's not like, oh, I've never done this before. I'll do this in a crowded place and nearly hit people.
It's when they're not wearing a helmet.
And they're never wearing a helmet because
they've never ridden a bike.
They're not cyclists.
Elle wants you all to walk.
Or cycle. Just cycle well. And you know when you've walked past a good cyclist, because actually you don't know until you see them cycling off into the distance.
That is very true. But I think the one lesson we can really take from this is please, please don't get a scooter because you look like a child.
I just think people need to know their craft before they inflict it on other people. Basically.
Okay. I think that ties up our pilot.
I think we should end on happier things in the future.
Maybe we need to rejig the format. Maybe we should just integrate complaints into the first section.
Maybe, yeah, because that's like, okay, cool, bye.
We're going to ruin your week and then say bye.
Okay, love you, bye.
I'm not bitter, I'm just tired. If you guys have anything you want to see from us, drop us a DM.
It'll just be like, just stop.
Yeah.
Just please, no more.
Just like,
no,
nobody cares about your bourgeoisie opinions on books.
Oh dear. But also, what else have you got to do? Well, now sit in a park. Actually, sit in your friend's garden.
And on that happier note,
hey!
We are signing off.
Au revoir!
If you've enjoyed listening to Prose Before Hoes, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. Otherwise, we'll have no idea.